This is KPTZ, Port Townsend, 91.9 FM on your radio dial. And for our virtual listeners, our website is kptz.org. That's where you can listen to today's show. You can also sample some of our earlier shows, which are online as podcasts. In fact, much of the original programming on KPTZ is currently available as podcasts. You know, double your listening pleasure. Listen to today's show as well as some earlier ones. I'm Marianne McNellis, and this show is called Our Town. Have you ever wondered who the people are that you see every day around the area? Who is the guy hunched in the corner of Better Living Through Coffee? He's laughing into his computer about something, but what? And who are those three women hurrying through the crosswalk with their hair blowing in the wind? Then there's the guy mixing warm coffee drinks at Alchemy. Those coffees are a little more bracing than what you can get at a regular coffee shop. This show, Our Town, profiles some of the fascinating people who live and work in Jefferson County. We talk with people who make up the eclectic mix around here. We talk about their lives, their dreams, and how they ended up on the western edge of the continent, able to look across the Strait of Juan de Fuca, right at Vancouver Island, Canada. Over time, we'll be talking with firefighters and foodies, bus drivers and teenage beauty queens, lawyers and the ladies who lunch. We try to find out what makes them tick and what they think about living in beautiful Jefferson County amid the deer, the otters, and even the soaring eagles. Listening to Our Town is a way to meet some of Port Townsend's authentic and even eclectic people, your neighbors, your friends, and particularly the people you don't know yet, but you'd like to meet them. Today, my guest is Steve Wilden, who's the head pharmacist at Safeway. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So tell me, are you a local Port Townsend boy? Were you born and bred here?
I did not have the pleasure. I am from elsewhere and am transplanted here.
Okay, so where did you grow up?
I was born and raised largely in Utah, and for the previous 10 or so years, I was in Idaho and only moved to the Pacific Northwest about a year and a half ago.
I see. Well, I'm always curious about people's high school experience because it does impact them. And kids have a way of pigeonholing everyone. They say so-and-so's a jock or so-and-so's a nerd or whatever. What do you think your peers, where did they slot you?
I was absolutely 100% a band geek.
Okay, explain a band geek to me.
I played the trumpet through my entire junior high school, and college career. So I've got about a dozen years of trumpet playing. So that was my crowd, and those were the people that I hung out with, whether that was ensembles or jazz band or marching band. I did it all.
Wow. So I've always wondered about marching bands. Sometimes the weather can be less than perfect. So what are the strategies that band members take to survive?
Usually a lot of complaining.
No thermal long johns, things like that?
Most of the time, the marching band happens during the hotter seasons. Though if you end up going to bowl games with your football team, then that can get very cold, which is difficult to put your... It's kind of like putting your tongue on a flagpole when you're playing the trumpet. You have to warm up the mouthpiece first.
Yeah, because I've certainly been to some winter football games where the band, and particularly, frankly, the cheerleaders out there in their little outfits, it looks pretty cold.
Yes, it is definitely cold, and there's very little that can be done and still maintain the uniform, so you suffer through it a little bit.
Exactly. Okay, so where did you go to university?
I have attended university in two locations. I have a bachelor's degree from the University of Utah, and then my post-baccalaureate work was in Idaho at Idaho State University.
Okay, and as an undergrad, what did you major in?
I have a bachelor's degree in Middle Eastern Studies.
I see, and that prepared you for which job?
The unemployment line, I think, would be the correct answer to that.
Sometimes kids don't think these things through.
Indeed. The only job that really could have come out of that the way that I pursued it would be to work with the CIA, and I didn't really care for the idea of moving around to the locations where that kind of job would have taken me, so I pursued other options.
So what did you do right out of university?
I worked for about a year at a call center for Verizon, and very shortly became the teacher for the classes at the call center, and then I got a job up in Idaho with a construction site. There's a government site out there that disposes of nuclear waste, and there was a building being constructed there, and I got a job as an environmental safety and health technician, which means that I sat at my desk and made safety signs all day.
Well, jobs like that could be dangerous to your health, I would think.
Potentially, though as a safety tech, the whole point is that my job is to make the job safer.
Right, right. And so how did the transition happen? What took you from that to being a pharmacist?
Well, it was a government-funded job, and as governments are wont to do, they cut the budget 30%, and I was in that 30%.
Okay.
So that left me unemployed, and I thought to myself, well, my degree isn't going to get me anywhere, so perhaps I'll go back to school. So I took a personality test of what kind of degree one should pursue
right.
according to one's personality. And I was quite surprised to see that almost all of the results were medically oriented, and almost all of the top 10 results were all in pharmacy.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah.
And so you decided to follow that lead and go to school. How long does it take to be a doctorate in pharmacology?
The doctorate of pharmacy is a 4-year program, though there are a minimum of about 3 years of prerequisites. And since my bachelor's degree was in the arts, none of my science work was sufficient. And so I had to start from scratch with the sciences, which in my opinion was just as well, so that it was all fresh when I entered pharmacy school. So I had 3 years of pre-work at Idaho State, followed by 4 years of the doctorate program, which puts me at a sum of 10 years of college.
Impressive. Impressive. So tell me, are there jobs waiting out there for pharmacists?
There are. The job market has been in flux. Some decade ago or so, there was a huge shortage on pharmacists. That trend has reversed quite a bit, and so the job market isn't quite as positive for pharmacists as it has been in the past. But the good thing about being a pharmacist is that you can get a job just about anywhere, as long as you stay in the country.
So it's not state-specific, it's for the whole country.
Your license will be state-specific, and you have to take and pass the law exam for whatever state you're practicing in, but most states do recognize the national exam for pharmacists.
I see. And most of our listeners probably have no idea what the salary range might be for a pharmacist. Obviously, it varies depending on experience and all this, but can you give us just a ballpark range?
I would say that it's probably a healthy estimate to say that most pharmacists earn anywhere between probably $45 an hour up to potentially as high as $65 an hour.
So how did you end up on the Olympic Peninsula?
Well, I actually was really looking forward to moving away from the high desert. I got very tired of hot, hot summers and cold, cold winters, and thought that I would also like to see what green things looked like. And I've always really enjoyed the Oregon area. That I had never been to Washington, but I knew that it was a similar climate. So in my interviews post-pharmacy, I focused on jobs that were available in Oregon and Washington. And I was offered some potential positions on the peninsula by a recruiter from Rite Aid. So over my Christmas break 2 years ago, I came up with my family, or with my parents, and traveled around the peninsula, stopping at all of the Rite Aids, where I was potentially going to get a job. And at the time, I was also working with Albertsons, so I stopped in at all the Albertsons as well. I went as far as Port Angeles, which my last stop was the Albertsons there, which is nearly on the far side of Port Angeles. And there was actually a position open there, and it was a very promising job. So I ended up moving to Port Angeles.
Okay. And obviously now you're working at Safeway in Port Townsend. So what was the transition there?
Well, it was Albertsons when I first stopped by.
Yes.
But the acquisition by Hagen made it a Hagen.
Okay.
And so I was hired by Hagen to work there. As some of you may know, that did not end well for most of the Hagen stores. My store was one that was closed. So that put me on the job market, and Safeway gave me the best offer. So for about a month and a half, I was what's called a floater pharmacist, where I go between different stores and fill in where needed. Though even from my hiring, the intention was that they wanted me to take over managing the store here. And they just needed to make sure that I was convinced that that was the right job for me.
Yeah, well, every store or every company has their own style of doing things, so you sort of have to learn it a little bit. I would think your business the same as anything else like that.
Absolutely. Now that the Albertsons and Safeway companies are owned by the same company, a lot of that has become the same between the companies. And since I have several years of work during pharmacy at Albertsons, it feels fairly similar to what I had worked at before.
Okay. How many people are on the staff there at the pharmacy at Safeway?
I've got about 10 folks there. Mm-hmm. And then we see a lot of people coming in, the floaters, technicians, and pharmacists coming in to help, either as extra labor or as fill-in labor as well.
Yeah, well, I've noticed some new faces around there.
There are some new faces.
Mm-hmm. When did you actually start at Safeway?
I started at our local Safeway.
Yes,
at the local. I took over at the very end of June and then began working my 80-hour weeks.
Well, every new manager wants to put his or her stamp on things. Are there any changes that you've already put in place, or are there any changes coming?
I did my best to increase the efficiency of the workflow there. The tools that we have to work with are rather old. I jokingly refer to our computer system as being as old as I am, though that's not quite accurate. But it is very old and very outdated, and I feel like I'm being asked to build designer furniture, but only given a hatchet to work with. So it's difficult to be a high-volume pharmacy with the system that's designed for low volume. But we make do as well as we can, and I try to focus on having my employees populate stations where they are the most efficient, but I have a lot of problems with attendance and budgets and a lot of concerns that mean that a lot of my days are short-staffed. It makes it so that my changes don't really take effect.
Someone told me that this Safeway is the highest volume Safeway anywhere. Is that true?
I know we're one of the top 5 busiest pharmacies in the state.
Why do you think that is?
I think it's because there's just a lack of competition here. There's Don's and there's Safeway in town, and there's just not a third option. And I think that in the past, it hasn't been a very good option to open a third pharmacy because I don't know that it could support one with the way costs are these days. 15 years ago, at this volume, it probably would have worked well, but you really do have to fill a lot of prescriptions to make a pharmacy functional.
You know, as a consumer, there's something I've always wondered, which is when you get your prescription, there is something called the cash price, which is usually fairly high. And then, you know, I have insurance. Many people have insurance. So, you know, that's obviously not what I pay. But what is the cash price?
The cash price is something that is set by the market that is generally obscenely high, and it's rarely even the price that we get the drugs for. So it's sort of like an average wholesaler price that is kind of a recommended guideline of what the medication should be sold for. However, insurance companies don't recognize that price as the going price for the medication, nor do most pharmacies. So the cash price is there. And to be honest, it just seems like it's more of a gimmick or a way to show you that your insurance is providing you benefit after all. Because if you're getting a $1,000 medication and your copay is $10, then that's a big deal.
Makes you feel warm and fuzzy.
Yeah. But the difference between $500 and $10 is not as substantial. So it's a price that just doesn't seem to have a lot of impact on daily life, because I, for one, am not comfortable charging anyone those prices. I gave the example of $1,000, but even less expensive drugs that might be $50, I know that we could still earn our profits off of a much smaller price. And so I do everything I can to get my customers a price that's acceptable both to them and to corporate.
Mm-hmm. Well, some of it seems ludicrous. I happen to be one of those people who needs EpiPens. I have a life-threatening allergy to peanuts and peanut oil. The cost of EpiPens has been in the news a lot lately, and I noticed recently the corporate spokesman said that EpiPens were $600, but they were going to introduce a generic at $300. But the reporter on this particular TV show went through, you know, how much it costs to produce it, et cetera, et cetera, and $300 is wildly high, too. Is there anything consumers can do?
There is not a lot that can be done. I do know that there is a sort of generic that's available. A generic implies that it's considered the same drug by the FDA, and so that we can substitute it freely. I do have an epinephrine injector available, but because it's not substitutable directly, the prescription has to be written not for EpiPen, but instead for epinephrine injector. And then I can order in the slightly less expensive version, which I, as I recall, is about $150 less. But there are some insurances that don't pay for the EpiPen that will pay for this.
Interesting. You're listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM on your radio dial. I'm Marianne McNellis. This show is called Our Town. Today, my guest is Steve Wilden, who is the new head pharmacist at Safeway. Well, he's not brand new, but he's newish. And the other thing I wanted to ask Steve about, though, is one day when I was standing down there at Safeway, I noticed a poster saying that Dr. Thor was going to be administering flu shots on the weekend. Tell me about Dr. Thor.
Dr. Thor, I have always done medieval reenactment, well, at least since I was 15, so about half my life. So I have access to some fairly unique costumes. I have even designed the armor that you saw in that poster and had a very good friend of mine in Utah craft it for me. At one point, we decided that adding a red cape to the armor would suddenly make it look very much like Thor. And so we did that, and I began to wear that costume occasionally for Halloween. And last year, when I was at Hagen, I actually wore it to work on Halloween and thought that was fun. But it's exhausting to do a regular shift wearing 40 pounds of steel.
Yeah,
so
I think
I don't,
so.
I don't like to do it very often. I'm given a goal of how many flu shots to administer in a given season. And I thought that one of the ways unique to me that I could increase our overall vaccination of the community and thus increase the health and welfare of the community would be to provide flu clinics in costume. I know most people wouldn't think of doing that, but I do love I love an excuse to get in costume, and I thought that it might make some children more comfortable getting vaccinated, because a lot of children are not comfortable with such things, and this year the nasal spray vaccine is unavailable due to lack of efficacy issues. So I set it up, I ordered the posters and set them up, and I did two clinics this year in my costume, both of which I came in on my days off because I didn't want to have to work a 10 or 12 hour shift wearing the armor, but had very fun flu clinics those days.
Was it all children who showed up?
No, it was not. In fact, I had quite a few adults saying that they waited specifically for that day.
That's interesting. So it wasn't just a mom who had her 7-year-old with her that would get it. It was people who came all by themselves without a kid?
Indeed. Correct. Yes, indeed.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
Are you planning on doing it again?
I do plan to do it again. Not this season, but next year I will do it again and probably do several of them through the course of the year and be better advertising with them.
Well, I think it's a brilliant idea, actually. Now, you mentioned your love of costumes and I want to say theater, but not really theater. You told me about something called LARPing. So I have never heard of this, and there probably are some of our listeners who haven't heard of it either. So explain that.
I suspect not. Yes. LARPing stands for Live Action Role Playing. Mm-hmm. When I describe it to people who've never heard of it, I refer to it as interactive theater. If you can kind of picture going to a playhouse where you interact with the actors and determine the course of the storyline, you begin to grasp what LARPing is. The LARPs that I have done in the past were very medieval in setting, kind of fantasy, like Lord of the Rings, with elves and goblins and such. And so each person gets their own costume. They make up their own character, their name, the backstory. Most LARPs will use foam weapons, so they're padded and very safe for use. And in a LARP, there is the game runner, the game master, who comes up with the plot of the storyline. And they will have some actors that we refer to as non-player characters who will take on various roles over the course of the weekend and be the townsfolk that ask for help from the adventurers, or they'll switch costumes and be the goblins that you have to attack. then the people who show up as players will act as their players all through the weekend and go through these different quests and things. It's very much like playing Dungeons and Dragons or a similar game, but actually acting it out with your own abilities.
Sounds like fun. But there is someone, you called a runner, the master. Someone has to write it, or at least get the general gist of it going, right?
Correct. Yes, the game master. Game master. Is, it's called something different in most LARPs. Okay. But the game master, or the plot coordinator, or whatever they happen to be called.
And where are these events held?
A lot of these events are held in state parks because you can rent out locations that both have cabins and are going to be mostly private, because one of the big points of LARPing is that you're immersed into this fake made-up idea. And if you have people in regular clothes walking by or driving through, then it breaks the immersion.
Probably.
So places like Miller Sylvania Park are very commonly used.
Probably startles those people to all of a sudden see all these people in costume. It's like, whoa, what's going on here?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Okay. So in terms of the pharmacy at Safeway, which you're running now, there have been times when I've been there where the lines have been really long. There have been times where they aren't that long. Is there anything that one can do? What's the strategy? Is there a time or a day to show up where it's better than others?
Well, showing up between 3 p.m. and 5 p.m. is the worst idea.
Yeah, okay.
Because everyone is getting off of work, or they're finally out and about, and that's when everybody shows up. That's when I get yelled at for long lines the most. But the best time would be probably, I'd say, between 10 and noon. That's usually when we can crank people through the line the quickest. But it varies depending on attendance. So if I have someone call in sick, depending on who it was, then that changes everything about the entire dynamic of my workflow.
Yeah. Now, I've heard occasionally some people get pretty nasty down there. Is that sort of part of the... It must be miserable, that's all I can say.
There are days, yes. It's a very stressful job. We're dealing with people who are in pain, who are dealing with depression, dealing with worse, dealing with maybe death, you're at death's door, just out of surgery, a lot of suffering. So these folks are coming to my door, and they're having to wait 30 minutes in line only to get to the front of the line, and it's not ready because there are 300 other prescriptions that aren't ready either. So we're working as hard as we can back there, but there's only so much we can do. So yes, people can be nasty, but in most cases it's understandable. I can understand anger, but I don't tolerate any kind of abuse of my staff. I put a very rapid end to that. So you can be angry, but don't be abusive.
Yeah, that's true. Well, what do you like about being a pharmacist?
I actually really like the interaction with people. It's unfortunate that my setup here limits my interactions with the patients so severely, because I really, really do prefer to sit and chat with people about the medications, how their life is going, and develop a personal relationship with my patients. But in my case, that's not really that possible. So I have to take joy where I can and be happy when people have gotten their prescriptions and didn't have to wait, or yesterday I didn't get yelled at once. So I take a lot of delight in that kind of work day.
Is it a career that you would advise young men and women to get into?
It's the kind of thing I would like to have a discussion with the person about. So if there's anyone that's seriously considering it, I would welcome a chat with them. I would say that it's right for some people, but it's definitely not right for a lot of people. The way that corporate America is headed, it has really done a lot to take away from the positivity that was the community pharmacy. And so I try to maintain as much of that as I can in my practice, but it's not like I'm the next door neighbor that knows everything about you, and every single person that comes by my counter, I know them by name. That can happen over years, but I see hundreds of people, 400, 500, 600 people every day, and so I can't really function in that capacity. So in terms of how pharmacy is today, it's mostly just really, really, really busy. Huh. Unfortunately, it's a difficult situation.
Yeah. I know you can't put a specific number on this, but what you just said surprised me that you might see 500 or 600 people a day. Mm-hmm. Roughly how many prescriptions a day go through that pharmacy?
We fill over 2,000 a week, and on any given day on the weekdays, we tend to fill about 400 or so.
Wow, that's a lot.
It is a lot.
And pharmacies are in different neighborhoods, let's call it. Do you stock things differently than if you had a pharmacy in downtown Seattle, for example?
Absolutely. In fact, that was one of my favorite things about floating between pharmacies, was that each pharmacy would have drugs that I'd not seen in a pharmacy before, and I would have to go and look it up again because it hadn't been part of my practice before, and so it was fun to see it. For example, here, this is largely a retirement community, and so I deal a lot more in things like estrogens and testosterones and Viagra than I do in my previous locations.
Interesting. Oh, a lot of those boys out there with Viagra. So, having been on the peninsula here for roughly a year and a half, how do you like it?
Oh, I love the peninsula. I'm so excited to be here, and that was part of, when I lost my job at Hagen, that was part of my stipulation was, you can offer me whatever jobs you want, but I'm staying somewhere on the peninsula. The furthest I was willing to consider was maybe Poulsbo, but I didn't want to be that close to the city because I hate traffic.
And so, aside from LARPing, what do you do in your spare time?
You know, I have so many hobbies. It's hard to keep track of them. For example, I have been getting into horsemanship with my girlfriend Vanessa Harold. So I'm looking into getting my first horse.
Ooh, wow.
And learning to ride well. So that's my newest. At other times, I've done some painting. I have done some writing. Boy, so I do tend to keep myself very busy.
Sounds like it. Sounds like it. It sounds like you deliberately chose to be in a fairly rural area. Why? A lot of young people, you know, the big city calls. They want to be in Manhattan or San Francisco or wherever. But you didn't seem that interested in that. Is that fair to say?
That is fair to say. I think those people are crazy. I hate the traffic, and I don't like the big city. But give me open space and land over convenience any day. I love having a home where I may not have people looking in my window from 3 feet away. I like to have privacy. I like to have the open spaces and a lot of trees around me. And, yeah. And this is the place for that.
We're lucky to be here. That's all I can say.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, believe it or not, we're basically out of time. My engineer is waving at me. And so I want to thank you so much for being a guest on the show. This is Marianne McNellis, the host of Our Town. My guest today has been Steve Wilden, who is the head honcho pharmacist at Safeway. Many of you have seen him either in his pharmacist attire, or perhaps you were lucky enough to see Dr. Thor. So thank you again. And listeners, keep on listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM, Port Townsend, for more dynamic, eclectic community radio.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production created by Marianne McNellis and engineered by John McPherson.